We will go out and find the conspirators, not just in government, but in the media. Yes, we're going to come after you. Whether it's criminally or civilly, we'll figure that out. But yeah, we're putting you all on notice. And this is why they hate us. This is why we're tyrannical. This is why we're dictators.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons, Cash Patel. Just one.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. In Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most, but not all, of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We are back after a brief and very much needed break for the Thanksgiving holiday. Thank you for tolerating our absence during that time. I hope you all had a nice holiday this year somehow. Desi Doyen, of course, is here with us as well. Did you have a nice holiday, Desi
Doyen? Yes, of course. Of course.
Of course.
Well, you know, what else are you going
to
say?
I'm going to say there's not, you know, maybe not as much to be thankful for this year as usual, or maybe there is. I actually had planned to open the phones to talk about how the holidays went for everybody out there following our final show before the break. About a week ago, when we spoke with Rich Logis, he's a lifelong Republican turned years-long dedicated MAGA cultist, by his own description. And until he finally, after voting for Trump in both 2016 and 2020, came to the realization that he had become a member of a cult, and he wanted out. When he realized how Donald Trump and his own governor, Ron DeSantis, had wildly mishandled the COVID pandemic for deadly political gain. Rich has since founded a nonprofit called Leaving MAGA to help those who have been pulled into the Trump cult to get out of it and to support the families and friends of folks in MAGA. We had spoken to him about his recommendations for how to deal with MAGA family members over the Thanksgiving holiday, including his recommendation to not discuss politics, if at all possible. Good luck. But to otherwise offer an olive branch. If you couldn't avoid that, then there are various ways to offer an olive branch to MAGA friends and family right now in hopes of creating eventually an off-ramp, a safe exit ramp for folks who in the coming months and years are, you know, possibly going to realize how they have been duped by the con man in chief who is heading once again back into the Oval Office in just about 2 months' time. Now, I heard from a lot of folks after that conversation, and I will recommend you download it. If you missed the episode, you can get it at bradblog.com for free. All of our shows since the beginning of time are free to download there. But I heard from folks after that show who were outraged by the idea of extending an olive branch to their MAGA friends and relatives, and from others who thought that it was vitally important to do so in hopes of paving the way eventually to bring our families and our nation back together somehow. So I was kind of hoping to open up the phones to hear from folks about how their holiday with MAGA relatives went this year. But the news late on Sunday about President Biden pardoning his son Hunter, well, that has changed our focus today. And I would love to hear your thoughts on that today in a little bit. If you're listening in our live Southern California listening area or listening live at kpfk.org from anywhere across the world, if you'd like to ring in with your thoughts, either for or against that pardon for Hunter Biden, or I suppose if you'd like to share your thoughts on how the holidays went with your MAGA friends and family, well, that's okay too. I can try to get to some of those calls as well. Or perhaps we'll hold that for another day in the near future. We'll see, for Christmas or something. Anyway, before we get to the pardon business in a moment, I want to briefly touch base on another point that I had been reporting on just before the holiday break as well. The concerns about the accuracy and public oversight of the November 5th election results and Donald Trump's apparent, if very narrow, victory over Kamala Harris, which I got a note, Trump once again failed to win a majority of the popular vote. So no, it was not a landslide or the huge mandate for authoritarian rule that Trump and his supporters are pretending to paint it as. I also hope to discuss that mandate business in an upcoming show in more detail. But as we'd been reporting after the election and in the lead up to our holiday break, there were a number of computer scientists and voting system and cybersecurity experts who had publicly spoken out about their concerns about the computer tallied results as reported from the November 5 election in the presidential race, strongly recommending that either full or partial hand counts of hand-marked paper ballots take place in a number of battleground states in order to assure the reported results actually reflected voter intent. Now, much of their concern was based on the fact that Trump supporters, following his 2020 loss to Joe Biden 4 years ago, had those supporters had unlawfully breached and copied and widely distributed proprietary voting system software in several battleground states after the 2020 election and in the subsequent years, as we've reported in great detail on this show over the past 4 years. And though these longtime voting system and cybersecurity experts, many of whom have appeared on this program a number of times over the years, they did not cite actual evidence of fraud or error, but they argue that due to the access unlawfully gained to the voting systems in a whole bunch of states by Trumpers, that because of that and other concerns, it would be wise and offer assurance to the American public if at least some ballots in the presidential race were publicly hand counted before the race was, before the results are ultimately finalized. There have been others who have cited concerns about the specific numbers reported from November 5, you know, various statistical analyses that they believe put the results in question. These numbers don't make sense for various reasons. But as I spent some time detailing before the break, those statistical analyses, those essentially guesses about results, whether they make sense or don't, they don't actually matter. In that the solution to those concerns is the same as the solution that the computer scientists and voting system experts are calling for. Publicly hand count the ballots to make sure that the results are accurate. And if nothing else, give all Americans the peace of mind that the results actually are accurate. just as I recommended after the 2020 election, when the Trumpers had concerns about those results, just as I recommended after the 2016 election, when Hillary Clinton supporters had questions about the results, just as I recommended during the 2016 primary, when Bernie Sanders supporters had concerns about the results in the primary against Hillary Clinton.
I'm so old, I remember back after the 2020 election when MAGA folks went on for literally years calling for forensic audits.
And I remember that, too.
They're weirdly silent now. I wonder why.
I know. They got kind of quiet, even though Donald Trump on Election Day this year said there was massive crime, massive fraud going on in Philadelphia. Right then and there, during Election Day, and yet he has not mentioned a word about it since.
So weird.
Weird. In any event, toward that end of these calls from actually legitimate experts and computer scientists, cybersecurity experts, and so forth, I got one more piece of news to cover on that for the moment. Over the break, another cybersecurity expert, this time an expert who worked with the Biden-Harris campaign back in 2020, who actually led the cybersecurity efforts for that campaign, has now expressed similar concerns about the results in an open letter to President Biden and Vice President Harris. This letter was written while we were off on break. Jacqueline Singh served as the lead incident response and threat analyst for the 2020 campaign to elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. She notes that, quote, during the 2020 election, anti-democratic forces attacked me personally with harmful lies, which I have since discovered have a foreign source. She says, since that election, these type of hybrid warfare tactics have become much more potent and destructive, and our enemies have widened their usage and application. As an example, she notes, note the myriad bomb threats received by key polling places on Election Day 2024, which disrupted our democratic process. She writes in her brief letter to the president and vice president last Monday, "Dear President Biden and Vice President Harris, as the cybersecurity lead on your 2020 campaign, I was proud to contribute to ensuring a secure election process. Today, however, I write to you with grave concerns about the integrity of the 2024 presidential election and the urgent need for a forensic audit to restore trust in our democracy. Recent reports detail alarming irregularities," she says, "including bomb threats traced to foreign sources, breaches of voting system software, voter roll purges, and a surge in rejected mail-in ballots. Together, these issues undermine confidence in the election results. Security experts and election officials have expressed concerns about the vulnerability these events expose, with some calling for recounts of paper ballots in key states." Jackie Singh goes on to say, "Given the unprecedented challenges, I urge you to consider a comprehensive forensic audit. Such an effort would not only verify the accuracy of the vote count, but also identify vulnerabilities that could threaten future elections." She notes that nations like Germany and Brazil have set examples by conducting forensic reviews to protect electoral integrity. The U.S. should demonstrate the same commitment to transparency and fairness. "As someone who has worked to safeguard our democracy, I believe that a forensic audit is necessary to ensure that every vote is accurately counted and public trust is restored. I respectfully ask for your leadership in initiating this vital process," she writes. "Thank you for your attention to this critical issue. I would be happy to provide further details or support as needed. Sincerely, Jacqueline Singh." Again, the lead cybersecurity expert for the Biden-Harris campaign back in 2020, asking the president and the vice president to speak out to request, demand, seek a forensic audit of the 2024 election results. Not saying that they are wrong, not saying that the results are inaccurate, but helping to restore trust in such a process, trust by all voters, hopefully. And now, with all of that said, I will note today, and all the coverage that we've done in previous weeks on this, I need to note that I see no sign, zero, of either the president or Kamala Harris or her campaign or the Department of Justice pursuing or even considering asking for such an audit or hand count, limited or otherwise, in any state. Now, that doesn't mean it isn't happening, that they're not looking at it, just that I have seen nothing. I've neither seen nor heard any word of it.
And I just want to underscore that these are all nonpartisan scientists. They're not doing this because of partisan political ideology. But, you know, we want to underscore that both Georgia and several other states, their voting systems software was breached by MAGA operatives, and the software was released onto the internet. And especially in Georgia, Secretary of State Raffensperger said in court that he would not update that software. Yep. With the recommended patches from Microsoft and the Computer Cybersecurity Agency.
From Dominion and the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency, the federal agency, said, please update the software given the breaches that have occurred already. And Secretary of State of Georgia, Brad Raffensperger, said, nope, not going to do it, not until after the 2024 election. So those systems were run on that essentially, potentially corrupted software.
Exactly.
That's why hand counting ballots, particularly in other states, because Georgia prints out their ballots with a computer, and who knows if it's printed out correctly or not in the first place. There's no way to know that after an election. None. But in these other states, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and so forth, yeah, you could do hand counts. But now, as I said, I don't see any sign of it. And would I still like it to happen? Of course, absolutely. In truth, I think that such public oversight is necessary in every election, but certainly in one that is set to have as a huge, grave, critical consequences as this particular election. But if you were hoping that such a count would happen, I will report that at this time, sorry to disappoint you, but I see no evidence of it occurring. I hope I'm wrong. There are very, very limited post-election audits that do take place, however, in a number of states. None of them particularly good or thorough in their process, though the one done by Maricopa County in Arizona, that's largely Phoenix, is probably the best in the nation. And I know there's an effort to try to have some sort of recount where citizens are allowed to request such a count. To see that done in some precincts, for example, in Pennsylvania. For now, however, I see no evidence that the Biden-Harris campaign, the Biden-Harris administration, nor the Harris-Walz campaign is actually taking any action along those lines. I hope that changes, but for now, that's where we are, and I wanted to give you an update on that since we have been off over the past week. While many states, including, I think, 5 of the 7 battleground states, are certifying their results, as of today, any challenges to those results, legal challenges, would come normally afterwards, after the certification, though a federal deadline of December 11 is written into federal law for what is called officially Certificate of Ascertainment of Appointment of Electors. Essentially, that's the date which states must finalize their selection of electors for the Electoral College before those electors then meet to make it official in each state capital on December 17. So if any challenges to results or requests for recounts or additional audits are to take place, it's largely going to have to be over the next week and a half or so. And as I say, I see no evidence of that happening at this time. Another news item or two here before we get to your calls on President Joe Biden's broad pardon of his son, Hunter Biden, in the wake of his gun and tax charges at 818-985-5735. On Sunday, Donald Trump announced his selection of billionaire Mossad Boulos to serve as his senior advisor on Arab and Middle Eastern affairs. It was the second time in as many days that the president-elect has chosen a family member for a key post in his new administration. Though Trump did not mention it in his announcement of the appointment on Sunday, Boulos is actually the father-in-law of Trump's daughter, Tiffany. And he was heavily involved in campaigning for Trump in Muslim American communities in battleground states this year. But that's what happened on Sunday. He named the father-in-law to his daughter as his Middle Eastern Affairs Senior Advisor. But the day before, on Saturday, Trump named real estate developer Charles Kushner. Does that name sound familiar? Charles Kushner to serve as the next U.S. ambassador to France. Now, Kushner, if his name sounds familiar, it's because he is the father of Jared Kushner, who is married to Trump's other daughter, Ivanka. Charles Kushner is also a federal felon who was pardoned by Donald Trump before he left office back in 2020 following a 2005 conviction on 18 federal criminal charges. Now, unlike Donald Trump, who was recently found guilty on 34 criminal felony counts in New York State, shortly after he and his company were also found liable on civil fraud charges, and they now owe the state of New York $464 million, Ivanka's father-in-law actually served, and the ambassador, the next ambassador to France, actually served most of his 2-year federal prison sentence. New Jersey's former governor, former Trump ally Chris Christie, who led the case initially against Charles Kushner back in 2005, as he was at the time the U.S. attorney for New Jersey, he said in 2019 that Kushner committed, quote, one of the most loathsome, disgusting crimes, unquote, that he had prosecuted. Kushner, while under investigation at the time for making illegal campaign contributions, targeted his own brother-in-law, a former employee who turned witness for federal prosecutors in their case against Kushner, who had hired a prostitute to lure his own brother-in-law into having sex in a motel as a hidden camera rolled. A videotape of the encounter was then sent to Kushner's own sister. Hell of a guy. He was sent to Kushner's own sister, who was the man's wife. But ultimately, that did not work. That intimidation stunt of a federal witness did not work, even though Charles Kushner tried his best. He ended up pleading guilty to 16 counts of tax evasion, one count of retaliating against a federal witness, in other words, witness tampering, and another count of lying to the Federal Election Commission, unlawful campaign contributions. Charles Kushner was sentenced to 2 years in prison before later being pardoned by Donald Trump for all of that. And on Saturday, Trump announced him for the plum post of ambassador to France, the day before Trump's other daughter's father-in-law was named to be the senior White House advisor of Middle Eastern affairs. All in the family, because that's how Donald Trump rolls. Also on Saturday, Donald Trump's stunning announcement, as AP describes it, that he will nominate longtime loyalist Kash Patel as FBI director. And that now sets the stage for a fresh round of turbulence, they report, at a law enforcement agency tasked with protecting the homeland and investigating federal crimes. Patel, a steadfast ally of Trump, is a study in contrasts from the current tight-lipped director, Christopher Wray, who was also, by the way, appointed by Trump originally after Trump, many argue unlawfully, fired the previous Republican FBI director, James Comey. And by the way, I will note that every single director of the FBI since its founding has been a Republican. Just thought you might want to know that. In selecting Patel late on Saturday over more conventional contenders, the incoming Republican president is again testing the loyalty of Senate Republicans and their willingness to defy him or not. Wray was appointed director of the FBI by Trump in 2017. Technically, he has 3 years left on his 10-year term, his 10-year tenure. In fact, not technically, but actually, he's got 3 more years. FBI directors are named for 10 years in order to at least try and ensure that directors of the nation's most prominent federal law enforcement agency can operate free from political influence or pressure of presidents. They don't get renewed. We don't choose a new one every time a new president comes in, unless, of course, the president is Donald Trump and he does whatever he damn well pleases. Presidents typically keep the director who was in place at the time that they took office. President Joe Biden did that with Christopher Wray, Trump's previous appointment. Biden's national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, said on Sunday that the Biden administration, quote, adhered to the longstanding norm that FBI directors serve out their full terms because the FBI director is a unique player in the American government system. But, you know, we don't do norms and traditions anymore in the Trump era, apparently. The announcement means that Wray can either resign from the job, consistent with Trump's apparent wishes, or he can wait to be fired once Trump takes office in January. Either way, the selection of a successor suggests that Wray's days as a theoretically non-political appointee are numbered, with a Trump loyalist coming in to take his place, if he can be confirmed by the Republican Senate majority. And as Kash Patel has indicated, he would enact the retribution that Donald Trump has promised to exact against his perceived enemies, which seem to include just about everyone at the FBI, at the DOJ, the federal government as a whole, not to mention his political enemies like the Biden family, Nancy Pelosi, Liz Cheney, everyone in the media who is not in the right-wing tank for Donald Trump. Here is Kash Patel promising to do exactly that during a podcast with Steve Bannon, by the way, another Trump loyalist, and yes, another felon who was pardoned by Donald Trump.
Do you feel confident that you will be able to deliver the goods, that we can have serious prosecutions? This is just not rhetoric. We're absolutely dead serious. We're not. You cannot have a constitutional republic and allow what these deep staters have done to the country. The deep state, the administrative state, the fourth branch of government never mentioned in the Constitution, is going to be taken apart brick by brick. And the people that did these evil deeds will be held accountable and prosecuted, criminal prosecutions. Cash, do you believe that you can deliver the goods on this in a pretty short order of the first couple of months so we can get rolling on prosecutions?
Yes, we got the bench for it, Bannon, and you know those guys. I'm not going to go out there and say their names right now so the radical left-wing media can terrorize them. But, excuse me, the one thing we learned in the Trump administration the first go-around is we got to put in all-America patriots top to bottom. And we got them for law enforcement. We got them for intel collection. We got them for offensive operations. We got them for DOD, CIA, everywhere. We will go out and find the conspirators, not just in government, but in the media. Yes, we're going to come after the people in the media who lied about American citizens, who helped Joe Biden rig presidential elections. We're going to come after you, whether it's criminally or civilly. We'll figure that out. But yeah, we're putting you all on notice. And Steve, this is why they hate us. This is why we're tyrannical. This is why we're dictators.
Now, actually, you're dictators for a whole bunch of other reasons as well. And that's not the only reason we hate you. But that said, Desi Doyen, did you hear that? They're coming for you and me, apparently.
Yeah, pretty explicitly, he says. He's coming for everybody who might be considered a political enemy of Trump.
And by the way, add that to what Project 2025 says about targeting Pacifica Radio Network, which we are at one of their Pacifica-owned stations today, our flagship station here in Los Angeles, KPFK. And we're on about, I don't know, 20 or 30 other Pacifica radio affiliates around the country. So that's what they are planning if Kash Patel is allowed to take over the FBI, or even if he isn't. And so with all of that context, then, we get to late Sunday night and the announcement from the White House. President Joe Biden pardoned his son Hunter on Sunday night, sparing the younger Biden a possible prison sentence for federal felony gun and tax convictions. Two cases, frankly, that would never have been brought against anybody unless their father happened to be running for president against Donald Trump. Donald Trump, a man who had weaponized his Department of Justice to target his political enemies literally during his first term in office and is now vowing to do so again. Hunter Biden was charged in the two cases by a special prosecutor who was originally assigned to lead the case after being appointed as a U.S. attorney by Donald Trump himself. The Democratic president had previously said that he would not pardon his son or commute his sentence after convictions in the two cases. One involved Hunter, who was addicted to drugs at the time, lying about his use of illegal narcotics on a gun application when buying that gun, which, by the way, nobody in the nation has ever been charged with doing unless the gun in question was used in the furtherance of a separate crime. Hunter owned that gun, by the way, for 11 days. He never even loaded it nor fired it before it was thrown away by his girlfriend. The other case involves taxes that Hunter failed to pay at the height of his drug addiction. He later paid back all of those back taxes that he owed, plus interest and penalties, before he was subsequently charged thereafter by Trump's prosecutor for tax evasion, even after that prosecutor had agreed to a plea deal, only to pull out of the deal following political pressure by Trump's pals in Congress for having made a deal in the first place for something that should never have been prosecuted at all. The move to pardon Hunter Biden comes weeks before he was set to receive his punishment after a trial conviction in the gun case and a guilty plea on the tax charges, and less than 2 months before Donald Trump is set to return to the White House with loyalists and political operatives in posts from the FBI to the DOJ. The Trump-appointed prosecutor on this six-year-long case against Hunter Biden was allowed to stay on the job and continue that investigation all throughout the Biden presidency. He was allowed to stay by President Biden himself after he took office in order to complete the prosecution of his own son. Biden could have fired the prosecutor at any time, as certainly you know Donald Trump would have. But he didn't. He allowed the investigation, the indictments, the trials, the convictions, the guilty pleas, all to move forward. Well, President Biden, in a statement released by the White House on Sunday evening, said, quote, "Today I signed a pardon for my son Hunter. From the day I took office, I said I would not interfere with the Justice Department's decision-making, and I kept my word, even as I have watched my son being selectively and unfairly prosecuted. Without aggravating factors like use in a crime, multiple purchases, or buying a weapon as a straw purchaser, people are almost never brought to trial on felony charges solely for how they filled out a gun form. Those who were late paying their taxes because of serious addictions but paid them back subsequently with interest and penalties are typically given non-criminal resolutions. It is clear, writes President Biden, that Hunter was treated differently. The charges in his cases, the president writes, came about only after several of my political opponents in Congress instigated them to attack me and oppose my election. Then a carefully negotiated plea deal agreed to by the Department of Justice unraveled in the courtroom, with a number of my political opponents in Congress taking credit for bringing political pressure on the process. Had the plea deal held, he notes, it would have been a fair, reasonable resolution of Hunter's cases. No reasonable person, he writes, who looks at the facts of Hunter's cases can reach any other conclusion than Hunter was singled out only because he is my son, and that is wrong, he writes. There has been an effort to break Hunter, who has been 5.5 years sober, even in the face of relenting attacks and selective prosecution. In trying to break Hunter, they've tried to break me, and there's no reason to believe it will stop here. Enough is enough, writes President Biden. He concludes by saying, for my entire career, I have followed a simple principle. Just tell the American people the truth. They'll be fair-minded. Here's the truth. I believe in the justice system. But as I have wrestled with this, I also believe raw politics has infected this process, and it led to a miscarriage of justice. And once I made this decision this weekend, he says, there was no sense in delaying it further. I hope Americans will understand why a father and a president would come to this decision. The pardon of Joe Biden's son comes just one day after Donald Trump announced plans to appoint longtime loyalist and fellow grifter Kash Patel at the head of the FBI, and one day after Trump appointed two of his daughter's fathers-in-law to top posts in the administration, one of whom Trump pardoned himself for 18 felony convictions obtained by a Republican prosecutor. So how do you feel about all of this today? I'd love to hear from you. 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. Some have been critical of Joe Biden, given that he had said repeatedly over the past year or so that he would not pardon his own son. Others have suggested that this will give Trump himself, by the way, already facing 34 felony convictions in New York, but it would somehow give him free rein to similarly offer pardons to his family members and, of course, to himself if needed, even though he can't pardon himself for the state convictions on 34 counts of fraud in New York related to the hush money payments to help him win the 2016 election, or his pending racketeering conspiracy indictment in Georgia for his failed attempts to steal the 2020 election in that state. 818-985-KPFK. If you would like to ring in, either way, pro or con, love to hear from you. Are you upset? Are you happy by Joe Biden's pardon of his son, Hunter? For the record, among others, Trump previously pardoned personal cronies, including, well, among others, Trump pardoned Joe Arpaio, Dinesh D'Souza, Bernie Kerik, George Papadopoulos, Charles Kushner, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, Steve Bannon, Trump cronies all. Trump pardoned a war criminal, for crying out loud, whose own fellow Navy SEAL members from his own platoon begged him to not pardon the guy. And by the way, the guy who led the charge to pardon that war criminal is a guy named Pete Hegseth, the Fox News host and accused rapist who Donald Trump has now tapped to lead the Department of Defense. 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735 is our number. Your calls and a few thoughts perhaps from some other folks on all of this straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to Brad Cass, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. So what do you think about Joe Biden pardoning his son, Hunter Biden? 818-985-5735 is our phone number if you're in our live listening area in Southern California or listening anywhere on the World Wide Web at kpfk.org. A couple of our friends who you've heard on this show many times, have rung in on this on Blue Sky, where, by the way, we now are. You can find me at The Brad Blog on Blue Sky, along with Twitter and all the others. But we're mostly moving to Blue Sky because it's better. Anyway, our friend Heather Digby Parton says, pardoning Hunter is the right thing to do. Throwing him in jail as Trump and his henchmen not only walk free but assume the reins of power would have been a huge miscarriage of justice. Jonathan Adler, a law professor, was over on Blue Sky also, was not so sanguine about it, though a bit snarky. He says, quote, so President Biden has pardoned his son Hunter and given Trump a precedent that certainly won't be abused. Well, yeah, I'm not so sure that Donald Trump needed help in abusing any precedent, to be frank.
You mean, oh, no, he's going to have license to do the corrupt things he's already done and has been promising to do.
That's what we're hearing from a lot of folks who say, well, two wrongs don't make a right. Now you've just given permission to Trump to do whatever he wants to do. Like he wouldn't have done that before. Marcy Wheeler, our friend from Empty Wheel, independent national security and accountability journalist, friend of the show, guest many times, she responded to Adler by noting, quote, Trump pardoned his own son-in-law's daddy, that would be Charles Kushner, his campaign manager who lied to protect him, that would be Paul Manafort, his NSA, national security advisor, that would be Roger Flynn, who lied to protect him, his coffee boy, that's a reference to 2016 campaign advisor George Papadopoulos, who lied to protect him, his rat flipper, who lied to protect him, that would be Roger Stone. Don't laugh, Wendell. I see you in there. And his former campaign manager, Steve Bannon, who had just helped him launch an insurrection. Says Marcy, if you think Biden flip-flopping on Hunter pardon after Trump names Kash Patel his FBI director is worse than Trump flip-flopping on whether Project 2025 is the core of his policy agenda, well, you should turn in your journalism credentials and also your democracy ones, she writes. For his part, Donald Trump reacted to the news of the Hunter Biden pardon, invoking prosecutions related to January 6, 2021, the attack on the U.S. Capitol. He wrote on his failing media, social media site, quote, does the pardon given by Joe to Hunter include the J6 hostages who have now been imprisoned for years? Such an abuse and miscarriage of justice, he said. Well, no, the pardon given by Joe to Hunter does not let hundreds of Trump supporters who physically assaulted and physically beat and damn near killed hundreds of law enforcement officials under his direction at the U.S. Capitol. It does not pardon them. Those who, sent 140 of those law enforcement officials to the hospital, many in critical condition, and no, they are not hostages. They are criminals, Mr. Trump. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. Let's go to Bill in Santa Monica. Hey, Bill, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hello, Brett.
Hey.
Hey, I can count on my hand number of politicians I respect who aren't corrupt,
yeah.
But for the Republicans to call Biden corrupt is like the tiger calling a lion violent.
Yes.
But Hunter knew this pardon was coming. Do you remember a couple of months ago he decided to plead guilty to all charges without even fighting them? Why would he do that unless he knew that he was going to get a pardon from his father?
Well, I will say
it doesn't make any sense.
Well, let me answer that. I mean, I don't know if he knew he was going to get that that pardon, but he had gone to trial. He did go to trial in the tax charges. Actually, is it the gun or the tax? Now I'm confusing which one he went to first. But one of them he went to. There were two separate trials: one in Delaware, one in California. And the one in Delaware, he went through the trial. And he was found guilty by a jury of his peers. He was found guilty on all of the charges. And so when the second trial came up, what he said was, and he went through all the motions, the trial was about to begin. And he said, you know what? I don't want to put my family, my father, through any more embarrassment on this. I'm just going to go ahead and plead guilty. So,
and does he sound like that type of man to you? Who would concern himself with putting his family in embarrassment?
Yeah,
he knew what was coming. He's not that kind of man. He's been a scumbag all of his life. But you know, I can't understand. No father would let his son go to jail. But one other thing.
Hang on a second. What do you mean he's a scumbag all his life? He was addicted to drugs, and he was for several years after his brother died of brain cancer. Joe Biden's only remaining son. He got pulled into drugs. He did some horrific, terrible behavior while he was an addict. But why do you say he was a scumbag his entire life, Bill?
Well, he had an affair with his dead brother's wife. I mean, that's up to him.
Well, hang on a second, Bill.
How many people do you know that act like that?
Who are addicted to drugs?
Life. I mean, you can defend them if you want. He's been a scumbag.
Hang on. He didn't have an affair with his brother's wife. His brother had died. He ended up, brother's wife ended up, going out eventually. There was not an affair that I know of. And of course,
the illegitimate child that he didn't want to claim, and then he had to claim it once. Please, come on. What do you say?
Okay.
That this guy's an upstright citizen, that he dropped those charges because he knew he was going to get a pardon.
Okay.
But I'd like to ask you one other thing about the new tattooed Secretary of Defense. Did you read the letter from his mother to him in the New York Times?
I've never
heard a mother talk about her son the way she talked about him. She called him an abusive person of women. He's used women all of his life. He's abused them. If you get a chance, read it. It's amazing.
I've never
heard a mother in private talk about her son like that, let alone in public.
I guess fair enough. I'm not familiar with that letter. I must have missed that. I know that there have been. Pete Hegseth, we're talking about, who's been named by Trump to be the next defense secretary, that he struck a settlement with a woman who claims essentially that he raped her. And then apparently Hegseth did not even tell the Trump campaign about that when they were the Trump transition team, when they were considering hiring him. And over the past, 24, 48 hours, some more reports about Hegseth's misconduct with women has come out regarding two nonprofits that he worked at, veterans groups that he had to step down from. So I hadn't heard about that letter. So, yeah, thanks for letting me know.
Read his mom's letter.
I will look forward to it. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate the call. 818-985-KPFK, taking your calls on your thoughts on President Joe Biden's pardon of his own son on Sunday night. Let me go to Larry in San Pedro. Hey, Larry, welcome to the broadcast. Welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you, Brad. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, Larry. What do you think?
Great. I'm going to have to apologize for breaking away from your trend here, but did you hear that Ralph Nader came out and said that 250,000 votes is the number of votes that Kamala lost by in the key swing states? Did you hear that?
I didn't hear Ralph Nader say that, but yeah, that's about the number total. In all of the swing states that essentially flipped the results from Joe Biden in 2020 to Donald Trump in 2024. Yeah, not a lot of votes. Very narrow. Like I said, Donald Trump did not once again fail to win a majority of the popular vote this year and only beat Kamala Harris by currently just over 1.5 percentage points.
What source did you hear that from?
I think in my case, I follow these results very closely. And I do things like add up the numbers. And as the results have been tallied up, they're still being tallied up out here in California. Those numbers are easy. You don't need any special sources for that. You can go look at the results at AP results or New York Times results and see what is being reported in each of those states and sort of add up the margins. Got it?
Okay. Last but not least, there was a caller over the weekend into L.A. Pacifica, and he brought up a new idea, which is VP Harris should resign and Mr. Biden should appoint her to be the attorney general so that she can then arrest Mr. Trump and incarcerate him. And I really like the idea. And well, I think we should put it out there.
Well, no, wait a minute. I think you're mixing up. Now, why would the president have to resign to appoint her as AG? He could stay in as president.
No, VP Harris.
Oh, she resigns. I see, and it puts. Well, yeah, I think talk about weaponizing the Department of Justice. That would be exactly that. I guess they could do it, but you know, what happens then when he, you know, is becomes president and he is no longer in jail and is even more hell-bent on retribution than he was beforehand. I don't know if it's a great idea, but it's a fun one. Thanks, Larry.
You're welcome, sir.
All right, take care. 818-985-KPFK. Our friend Pouffet sends email to me, bradcast@bradblog.com, to say, yo, brother B and sister D. I guess that'd be you, Des. You two, like myself and others, feel that something is amiss with this election. I also noticed that Trump supporters don't seem to be so enthusiastic about Trump's victory. Remember, be a joke unto yourself, he says. Love you both. Keep spreading the goodness. You can write me as well. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. Let me go to Rob in Apple Valley. Hey, Rob, welcome to the Bradcast, sir.
Hey, Brad, how are you today?
Oh, really, you know.
But anyways, yeah, some of these folks, man, they just seem very unreasonable. They just hate so much, right? They're bred to hate, like Democrats and Clintons and, you know, anything, you know, that's not on their side, not on their team. And it's really difficult to deal with. But as far as, like, the Biden pardoning the Senate, that's good for him. I found that out late yesterday, and my buddy told me. And I was like, wow, you know, I totally forgot about it, you know, until you'd mention it, you know, when I got home from work. But, man, these people are just unreasonable, and it's going to – who do these people think they are, you know? So, you know, you mentioned the Kushners and all these folks, man. It's like, geez Louise. Lordy.
Well,
I'm going to let you go. That was my comment. You know, if you got to say anything to tell me, say it now.
Well,
don't scold me.
I won't scold you, Rob. I'm not that mean. But I will say, your point about bred to hate the Clintons, hate the Bidens and so forth – they're not bred that way. They are fed that way
well,
by the right wing. Yeah. Hang on, by the right wing media, by the social media platforms like Elon Musk's Twitter that he now calls X, even by some, yes, far left outlets who spread lies and nonsense about the Clintons. There's reasons to not like Hillary Clinton. There's reasons to not like Joe Biden. But no, not the kind of hate and bile and vitriol we see. That is a product of our failed media system, which has failed to properly inform the
electorate.
You're
right. Yeah. I agree with that, you know, too. But, you know, when you got kids that hate on Clintons and weren't even involved with any of their presidencies or anything, you know, and that's kind of it kind of makes me think that. I thought about this for years, you know, because I watched it happen, you know.
You're
right with the media and all this stuff. But, anyways, I'm going to let you go take some more callers, and I hope you get some Mo. Around.
Thanks. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate that. And it does look like Mo is standing by. 818-985-KPFK. A lot of us have seen, you know, I've been on this beat for, you know, more than 20 years now. And we saw with the arrival of Rush Limbaugh on stations across the nation, which was allowed after first Ronald Reagan dissolved the Fairness Doctrine, then Bill Clinton signed the Communications Act of 1993, which allowed guys like Rush to be on stations all over the country for huge corporations to buy up all of the radio stations, essentially, and keep out people who, you know, told the truth, progressives and so forth. Then add in Fox News, now add in social media, all controlled by right wingers. And yeah, you end up with an electorate who is pretty confused. Who is pretty, I'm trying to avoid FCC issues here, but are pretty messed up in the brain.
misinformed and disinformed.
Correct.
Is what I would call it. And correct. I just want to add one thing that also touches on the media here that I think that I'm disappointed about Biden's timing for this, because I think what he has succeeded in doing is knocking out coverage of Trump's selection of the wildly unqualified, wildly inappropriate loyalist Toady Cash Patel to head the FBI. I mean, that is nuts. And now the corporate media is all focused on that little shiny thing, which is not a thing that will actually make any difference whatsoever in any American's actual life. And
the pardon will make no difference.
Yeah, the pardon of Hunter Biden. But Patel actually pledges to use the FBI for political prosecutions. Yeah. Last year, Patel explicitly promised to prosecute Hunter Biden for new alleged crimes.
But do you think that there would have been any timing that would have somehow been better? Because I promise you, between now and the day he is sworn in on January 20, and for the next 4 years, there will not be a day that is a better day to do it. Of course, he couldn't do it after he's sworn in. But between now and January 20, every day, Trump is going to own the media cycle with some crazy bat crap nonsense.
Yes.
And I hear what you're saying. I just don't think there would have been any better timing that it could possibly have happened in. Just my thought. 818-985-KPFK. By the way, Eric Holder, the attorney general during the Obama administration, responded to the pardons by tweeting, quote, "Here's the reality. No U.S. attorney would have charged this case given the underlying facts." Talking about the Hunter Biden case. "After a five-year investigation, the facts as discovered only made that clear. Had his name been Joe Smith, the resolution would have been fundamentally and more fairly a declination, declining to prosecute at all. Pardon warranted," says Eric Holder. "Ask yourself a vastly more important question," he writes. "Do you really think Cash Patel is qualified to lead the world's preeminent law enforcement investigative organization? Obvious answer, hell no," says the former attorney general. 818-985-KPFK. Oh, we got to go. We're running late. I could have kept going all day on this, which means let's go to Mo, our friend in Long Beach, Morris. Hey, Mo, welcome to the broadcast, sir. Hope you had a delightful holiday, my friend.
I really did. I just turned a big 71, too, not too long ago.
Hey, happy birthday, old man.
You know, we're 5%, I say me in the United States. We're 5%, Bradley, of the world population. But we consume 80% of the world's drugs. You know, we can get into that later on. So with the fact that Hunter Biden was a drug addict, he's not alone. I don't think there's one American family that's escaped that issue. So it's not fair to call him a scumbag and all kind of dirty names like that. You know, he was just caught up with, like everybody else, you know, 80%. We consume 80%. And also, since that election, I have not listened to the voice of Donald Trump. I've not watched no MSNBC, seen none of that. See, you guys do that for us, because he's not going to turn my stomach, and I appreciate you all doing it. But we're going to get through this, okay, because he's on the clock, too. And I appreciate you taking my comments, Bradley. Talk to you later.
I appreciate everything about you, my friend Mo. Happy birthday. So good to hear from you. We got to get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our board operator, Wendell the Handyman Handy. Thank you, sir. And to all of you for calling in today, and all of those who are listening. Greatly appreciated. If you want to, if you missed any portion of today's show, download it anytime from brandblog.com. Drop me email. I am brandcast@brandblog.com. And on the social medias, I am the Brandblog. The social medias, including Blue Sky. We will see you there until we see you back here tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.